And I find it fascinating. We were talking earlier about parallels, about what's happening in the world today. I think there's parallels with what happened with Buddha, who was born a very rich prince who had everything he needed and realized he was still suffering. And I think that parallels, you know, what's happening in our culture today. We have far more than Buddha ever had. We have air conditioning and chocolate and movies. But, you know, we still suffer. We're realizing, I think, you know, this collective realization happening in our culture that having all this stuff doesn't actually make us feel, it certainly satisfies our basic needs, but there's still deeper needs which aren't satisfied. We're still suffering. And so Buddha went off on his search, just as I feel our culture's been on its search since the 60s. Buddha went off 6 years in the forest, studying under the best teachers he could find at the time, which were not much. That was the very, very early days of Indian spirituality. And India was just coming out of the time of the Vedas, which was very much about ritual and sacrifices and obeisance to all the different deities and things. And he had to sort of work it out on his own. And eventually he did, after nearly starving himself to death. He thought, well, maybe you should give up everything, that'll do it. And what he realized, his awakening, it's often called the Four Noble Truths, is his first teaching when he came out from sitting under the Bodhi tree. The first is just called the truth of suffering. The word that he used is dukkha. And dukkha, it's translated as suffering in the West. Well, it has been translated as suffering in the West until recently. I think what happened was that a couple of hundred years ago, European explorers and academics and just the people around, the sort of traveling philosophers of the time, they came across these new, completely new cultures in Asia, completely new languages, with completely new religions that hadn't appeared at all in Europe. And they were fascinated by them, trying to understand them, trying to understand the language, what it was about. And as they did this and all their questioning and research, they came across the word dukkha, which was fundamental to Buddhism. And they thought, oh yes, suffering. We know suffering, you know, Christ suffered for our sins. We know what suffering's about. The word doesn't actually mean that. If you go back to the root of the word, it's actually a negative. Dukkha is the negation in Sanskrit or Pali of the word sukha. The word sukha, you could translate it as being at ease. It actually, its root meaning is a wheel that revolves smoothly around its axle without resistance. That's the root meaning of sukha, is a wheel that revolves smoothly around its axle, no resistance, smooth flowing. So dukkha, the root meaning of dukkha, is much more, it's resistance to the flow, resistance to the flowing. And that resistance then creates what we're talking about this morning, the experience of discontent. Our, as it's often translated, unsatisfactoriness. And a lot of Buddhist teachers these days translate dukkha not as suffering, but as unsatisfactoriness. Things are not satisfactory. I think discontent says it simpler. But we are discontent with things, which is we are resisting the way things are. So the basic resistance is the resistance to how things are in the moment. We start wishing they were different. If only this weren't the case, I'd be happier. If only I had this, I'd be happy. And it's that thinking which creates the discontent. So that was his first truth, was seeing that we all live in that state a lot of the time, discontent being created. Because we are resisting the moment, we are resisting what is, we are wishing things would be different, which is, if you think about it, it's absolutely stupid. You know, no amount of wishing things would be different is going to change things. Things are as they are. We may want to change things in the future, but you cannot change the present. But this is what we do. We get caught up into resisting how things are. I don't like this. It isn't right. Or I do like this. I'm going to hold on to it. And I don't want this to go away. It comes the other way of relating to it. And then the second noble truth was clinging. Seeing that the reason we resist things is because we cling to our ideas of the way things should be. This is the way things should be in order for me to be happy, to be at peace. The world needs to be a certain way. And so the clinging, the second noble truth, comes from, again, what we're talking about this morning, that way of thinking, that belief system, that how I feel inside depends upon what's going on around me. That belief system that takes us out of natural mind, that focuses our attention on how to get things, make things the right way. That's the source of the clinging. And then the third noble truth is Nirodha, which means basically releasing, letting go. It's an undoing. So it's really about an undoing of the clinging, releasing it, and letting go of the clinging. Realizing that we don't have to cling, we can actually just release it, which is coming back to the present. And then the fourth noble truth was his particular prescription on how to live your life so as not to create attachments, not to create clinging, how to live a life so that you didn't recreate all this stuff continually and get lost in it. And I think that's where, you know, we're getting to today as a culture, is we're going through a similar process as Buddha. And as he had to sort of strip away all the religious trappings of his time, I think we're doing the same, just stripping it all away and coming down to that core truth, and it's a universal truth. And that's why so many people are saying, come back to the present, be here now. The power of now, coming back to the present, accepting the present as it is, being in the moment.